This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Thursday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Alice Perryman from Permira, Texas, and you are listening to a special trail riding episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for January the 19th, episode 1613, brought to you by Wander Themed Adventures. Good morning, Horse World.
Thursday. I'm so happy it's Thursday.
Just an ordinary day.
If you love to ride horses, but you'd rather ride on a trail than in an arena, I think I know a sport just for you.
We're getting to the first mark. We're a little ahead of time.
Expect nothing less than full-blown chaos.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome back. Alice is here for the NATRC trail riding episode, as she is every third Thursday of the month. Good morning, Alice.
Good morning, Glenn.
It's good to have you back again from Texas.
Good to be here. So we've been having lots of rain.
Yeah, Texas is either rain or drought. There's no in between. It's
seems like, yeah. Yes.
You're either flooding. I saw the pictures of Houston Stadium. Oh my gosh. It looked like a big swimming pool. It was like a big swimming pool.
And my back pasture looks like a big swimming pool too.
Is it the Super Bowl down there this year?
You know, you may be right. I don't know.
I think it's at the Dome Stadium.
I saw a meme about. I saw something about Jerry Jones protesting the Super Bowl. You know, making it was a joke, and so it could be that would make sense why he would be protesting.
That shows you why we never talk about sports on this show other than horses, because we have no idea. So if you,
I actually know quite a bit about football than most of my male counterparts. I keep up with it. Accidentally.
I watched my first game last week, the Dallas game. I always wait till I never watch any of the playoff games, but I did watch the playoff game this year, and it is in, it's at the NRG Stadium in Houston, Texas. So there we go. But that's the one with the dome, so I doubt it'll be flooded like the other stadium was in Houston. But you guys...
Yeah, both my teams lost, so I don't care anymore. I don't... Yeah, Dallas lost. I was actually kind of happy about that. But the Chiefs lost, so I'm out.
Alice, you're breaking up on us. We can't talk to you anymore. Bye.
Oh, no. What?
I'm a Dallas fan.
What?
So.
Oh, sorry.
It was a good game, though.
I wanted to see. I wanted to see Prescott go to the Super Bowl just because he's, you know, a rookie, and I thought that was way cool.
Yeah, he is cool.
You know.
Yeah, it was a close game. It was a good game. Nothing to be ashamed of, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, we have some fun stuff we're talking about on today's show, and Jennifer's going to tell us about it.
Coming up on today's NATRC episode, brought to you by Wander Themes, we will have a riding vacation smackdown to open things up, and we're going to compare the top five equestrian vacation spots from two different mass media outlets. We'll see if either of them got it right. And then after that, Carlos from Wander Themes does have it right. And he's going to talk about getting away on horseback. And then rounding out our adventure, Bill Wingle has the who, what, and why of GPSs for equestrians. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
I'm excited about that because I actually don't know much about riding, the GPSs you guys use for riding. So I'm excited to hear about it.
Me too, because like I know how to use my GPS to like tell me how fast I'm going or how far I've gone, but I'm looking forward to learning more about the mapping function.
Yeah, because that'd be the important one if you're a serious trail rider, right?
Right.
Yeah. So and also which GPS? There's like 1,000 of them, so maybe he can give us some idea which one to get too. But we are going to be talking a little bit about travel. But in the meantime, you have moved again. Is that right?
Well, no, I was, well, I was in the process of moving last month. I think I was still in Bluffdale. I don't remember. No, last month I was here. Anyway, when I got married in October, and so I started the process of moving, but I finished moving everybody and all my stuff at the end of the year. So I have been here for about 3 weeks, and I've been enjoying riding a lot in between the rain. And I've started to work some, but I've been just kind of enjoying not working so hard. And then yesterday I looked up and saw that I didn't have any money and decided I probably should get back to it.
That usually is the case. That's when you determine it's time to work again.
Exactly.
Because you're kind of a...
I am. I mean, I've...
You kind of work for yourself. In other words, you take work when you can get it. You're in home care, right?
Well, I'm a music therapist and a massage therapist, and I work mostly with handicapped folks.
Right.
And so I have contracts that have transferred to my new location, but just getting started takes a while because they send me people to assess, and then I have to wait for them to be approved, and then I get paid a month after I see them.
Yeah.
And I orient for a new contract next week, and it looks like it's going to take off running right away. And I've been teaching some writing lessons, and I've been teaching some piano lessons, and been doing the spare massage here and there, but I can't say I've missed working. It's been nice to not work, but now I don't have any money. So
now the husband's going, okay, it's time to get back to work. Go to work, Alice.
No, he just says, do whatever I feel like I need to do. It's like, do we have enough money to pay the bills? It's like, well, no. And he's like, well, then you better go to work.
I like him. He's a practical man.
He's retired, so, you know.
Yeah, he's retired, sending you out to work. Okay, you go to work.
That's right.
How many horses do you have now?
Well, we have 10 horses. We had 9. Well, let's see. I don't even know. I know that he has 3 of those were his to start with, and then the rest of them were mine. But then one of them I got for him. And then I got my old horse back. I had my old horse Freely that I got in 2005. He was 15 and he'd been a 100-mile endurance horse, but he'd had some lameness issues and some arthritis. And I got him and used him for day track. And Maggie rode him when she was younger for Pony Club. And then he retired to my friend Teresa's house where he was like a company horse. And now that I'm doing some lessons and stuff, he's 26 now, but he'll be 27 this year. But he's still in good weight and he's still a good attitude and he's still mostly sound considering his age. And so I brought him here to be with me and my herd.
And that's good.
I love having the old man back. So,
well, that's good.
It's been a challenge figuring out how to get everybody fed without it taking 2 hours.
Yeah. Well, you know, we always have that rule. Work doubles after 7 horses. When you get to the 8th horse, your work just doubles. There's no rhyme or reason to it. It just does. So you're
okay. I felt the same thing with 3.
Well,
2 was really easy, but 3 was super hard.
It's 3, 7, and 13 is what we learned through the years. 3, 7, and 13. After 13, you just need help. You can't do it yourself after 13. You just need help. If you have stalls, especially if they're coming in every day, you can't do it. It's just too much work. Well, you know, it's interesting too, because I was thinking about you moving with horses. People that don't have horses don't realize that when you move, your work is tripled when you have horses, because not only you just got to move all their stuff, you got to move them, which is usually not in one trip unless you hire a professional, right? When you have 10. So it's just, it's just a pain in the butt to move. The one time we moved, we had just gotten an entire tractor trailer load of hay, an 18 wheeler tractor trailer load of hay full. And we had gotten it like 3 weeks before, which means we had to hire another tractor trailer lot and unload all that hay out of the barn and load it into the new barn as part of our move. That sucked. That just sucked.
Oh, yeah. See, I looked ahead when I bought my hay for this year. We already knew I was moving, so I kept like 4 or 5 bales at the other house and then brought the rest of it here.
Yeah, well, smart move. I guess moving a tractor trailer load is not good.
I had stalls at Teresa's. I had pens, and everybody, like, I had, like, certain horses, like Mike's horse, Sherman, has to eat by himself because he's just the jerk at feed time. And then others would be okay on their own because they ate the same feed and the same amount, and they're both old. But here, I don't have as many compartments. So I finally got them arranged into the, I jokingly call them the haves and the have-nots. The have-fat and the don't-have-fat. So the ones that need feed and the ones that really don't have to eat, except
right.
for the hay they have in the pasture. So
there you go.
So I got that arranged yesterday. So I'm going to see how that goes when I go out to feed today, see if it works better.
Well, before we start talking about travel, let's talk a little bit about the NATRC. See, it's a new year. I have to start all over again, remembering how to say that. NATRC is offering free memberships for the first time this year. What's that about?
Well, actually, it's the second time. We did it last year. For people who have never been members of NATRC, we're trying to encourage folks to sign up. That saves people. Whenever you're a member of an organization, it's always cheaper to ride with them than if you're not. And so this way, it doesn't cost them to sign up. And when they come to rides, they're going to save themselves, $10 or $15 off of their ride entry because they're not paying the non-member fees. It's a shameless marketing ploy. I admit it. We're trying to see if how many people were experimenting. Hopefully people will stay after the free membership. And we knew that we needed to do it for several years in succession to see if that was a good enticement. And it has been so far. It's been very successful for us. We have a lot of people that signed up in the second half of the year in our region who came to all the fall rides. And I'm also I'm putting on a ride next month and I'm giving first time riders a $10 discount. And I'm also giving the friends that bring those riders a $10 discount for each person they bring that's new. So just trying to,
I think it's a good idea.
Spread the joy.
Yeah, it's a great idea. Yeah. Because, you don't want any barrier to entries for people who are looking at trying a new discipline. You want them to try it, right? So let's take away the barrier to entry and get them to at least try it and then let them get hooked or not. One or the other.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I have one friend who's been dying to do this forever, but the entry fee has always been kind of a stumbling block for her because her money's tight. And so she got her free entry. And because she's new doing her first ride, she's getting $10 off. And she knows some people who may want to come. And she's super motivated to bring people, which will give her $10 off of each person she brings. So there you go.
All right, cool. Well, let's talk a little bit about travel, one of my favorite topics. And we came up with something fun to do before we have your first guest on, who actually knows a lot more than we do. But we thought it would be fun. Jennifer came up with two different lists. And I'm going to take the list that is non-horse related. It's from Forbes magazine, and it's the top 10 travel destinations that they recently came out with. And what we're going to do is take a look at the top 5 of those. And then now you have the list that's from National Geographic of the top 10 horseback riding trips. So we're going to compare the two, the horse husband version of the non-horse riding.
Okay.
And then you're going to go over the horse riding, and each one will compare, we'll compare the number 5s, and we'll decide which one we would do. We'll all get a vote. All 3 of us will vote on which one we will do. So let's start the bottom of our lists. I'll get started with the top 10 travel destinations. This is number 5 of the non-horsey variety, and this is by Forbes magazine. So they say Vancouver, Canada, celebrating its 150th anniversary in 2017, celebrations will be plentiful. Vancouver's perfectly nestled between the Coast Mountains and the Pacific Ocean, offering endless options and attractions such as the nature scene at Stanley Park. Recently, Vancouver has become the forefront on a wish list for people wishing to relocate from the States. All right, Vancouver, Canada was mine. What was yours, ironically?
Quebec, Canada. And it says, we often forget... Yeah, Quebec.
Opposite sides of the country.
We often forget that Quebec is something of a foreign country within Canada itself, with a different language and culture that is basically French. The end-to-end ride on the Grasse Bay Peninsula of the Gulf of St. Lawrence passes through magnificent forests, skirts the seashore, and overnights in a string of inns. The fall foliage season with the blazing maples is one of nature's wonders.
Oh, that's tough.
I'm totally in for that.
as a horse husband who only rides on vacation, I'm almost leaning towards Quebec. I've been to Quebec before. We actually did our senior school trip from Pennsylvania was to Quebec, Canada. Believe it or not. That's when they used to do really cool trips. So, you were in high school. And we had a
blizzard. We went to a dude ranch.
Did you? You were in Texas.
So. But we didn't get to ride. We just had a campfire.
We went for a week to Quebec, and we had a blizzard, and we were snowed in Quebec because there was a blizzard and nothing was moving. We were supposed to go skiing. We couldn't even get to the ski resort. But we did, finally, the snow melted a little, and they got the roads cleared, and we were able to do stuff. But this one, Jennifer, I know which one you'd pick, right? You're going riding end-to-end in Quebec, for sure.
Duh.
Yeah.
Well, then I'm thinking I could use my 4 years of French that I haven't used since college. Wonder if I could.
Get a return on your
investment. Pick up enough. Maybe.
Maybe we'd learn how to say the name of the peninsula. I took French, and I never did very well at French. The end-to-end ride.
I think it's Gaspé.
Gaspé. That's what I was thinking. Gaspé Peninsula. That one, that does sound cool. Yeah. I got to get. I might go for that one, too. So we're all in. Top 10 travel destinations, non-horse, Denver, Colorado comes in number 4. The Mile High City is perfect for activity-driven and naturalist enthusiasts alike. Visit the sprawling 23-acres oasis on Denver by Botanical Gardens before skiing the states, in the Rocky Mountains and all that stuff. We did Denver last year, so let's hear what your option is.
Well, Tuscany, Italy is my option for number 4. This is a ride through the stunning part of Italy. It's a happy combination of idyllic Tuscan landscape, seen from the back of fine horses, and a chance to study some of the world's great art treasures from Florence and Siena. The renovated castle, this is Castello de' Dolci, where guests stay, keep the ancient charm while providing modern comfort. The host, who also runs a cooking school, is marvelously entertaining, and the preparation of food and choice of wine are celebrated here with near religious fervor.
I think we're all in Italy,
I'm sorry.
Aren't we?
Tuscany is like way better than Denver, Colorado.
I mean, we loved the Rocky Mountains. We're talking about going back there again this year, but I'm in for Tuscany. Jennifer?
Yeah. That's awesome.
I think Jennifer's in for Tuscany, too.
I mean, you got me. You had me at wine, food, and castle.
You had me at cooking. So in a castle. That's where you had me. So
in a castle. Yeah. Cooking in a castle.
Well, this is leaning towards horses here for sure. The next one, top 10 on the non-horsey ones, and I'm just going to tell you this. I don't even need to read the description. This is from Forbes. Number 3 is Merida, Mexico. I'm not going to Mexico. You couldn't pay me to go to Mexico right now. Now they are shooting up the tourist destinations and killing a bunch of... I'm not going to Mexico right now. I don't know. Just me. But are you going to Mexico right now?
I have never been to Mexico, and I'm thinking this would be a bad time to go.
Yeah, they're even shooting up Cancun right now, so the drug lords. So it's not it's not a good time.
That's terrible.
So let's hear what our option is.
Okay, well, number 3 for me is Loire Valley, France. The great castles of Loire Valley are arguably the France, yeah. If I can practice my French again.
Yeah.
See if I can say these. Chenonceau, Chevronnet, and Chaumont are outstanding examples of tremendous flowering of French culture of the period. The history is brought alive by staying each night in real castles, still in private hands, and riding into courtyards over drawbridges like knights of old. Especially lovely, a long, wild gallop through the tree-lined banks of the Cher River heading for Chenonceau.
Well, you did pretty good on that one. I got to give you credit. You did better than I would have. But can I wear, I used to play a king in my past life. Can I wear my king's outfit while I'm riding over drawbridges like knights of old? You think they'd let me?
No cape.
No cape?
No cape.
What fun is that? All right, Jennifer, what are you? Are you going to Mexico or are you going to France to go riding between castles?
Castle, hello.
Yeah.
Castle, ride. Castle. Well, you had me with castle and ride.
Yep.
Right? There you go.
Yeah. Like, castle versus guns.
You probably have to duck less in France. That's right now, anyway. And you know, can you imagine what that trip costs? That can't be cheap. All right, let's...
I don't know.
Yeah, we don't have the prices here. All right, next, number 2 on the list of... of non-horsey is Cape Town, South Africa, a destination with a rich art scene and a much anticipated opening of the Zeitz Museum of Contemporary African Art. Cape Town is becoming a popular destination for newlyweds looking for a foodie scene and stunning mountain and beach views. The wine country and Cape Peninsula, both a short drive away, are extraordinary. And of course, if we're going to make it horsey, you're a short drive away from a horsey safari too. So, you know, Cape Town, I would go to Cape Town, that's for sure. But what's our option?
It's Maasai Mara, Kenya. It says, for sheer excitement and adventure, this ride through, kind of butchered again, Maasai Mara in Kenya wins hands down. Flat out gallops on excellent polo ponies alongside zebras, wildebeest, and past elephants and giraffes, lions, and another dozen animals. It's a thrilling experience that one could never get from inside a Land Rover. Hemingway-style camping and superb service are other pluses. Close contact with the proud Maasai in remote areas adds to the fascination. I think I'm going for Cape Town.
Are you? You're not going to go riding with the wildebeests?
That sounds terrifying to me. They lost me at flat out gallop.
Kind of lost me at that too, actually. I that's where I got lost too. And then I'm back to Cape Town eating food with you, actually.
I
was thinking, I wonder if they'd let me use a carriage. If they could let me use a carriage in the one in Kenya, then I might do it. If they let me drive a carriage. But
well, I wondered what Hemingway style camping was.
That's like little yurts and tent. Really not. It's more like glamping. It's more like glamping, you know.
Oh, well, see, you might. That wouldn't be bad, except you still have to use the bathroom outdoors.
Yeah, see, I was kind of thinking about the wildebeest and the lions while I'm going to the bathroom out in the woods. You know, that's what I was thinking. So I'm kind of in with you. Now, Jennifer, this is a tough one for you. Which one? Camping.
I might go to Kenya.
Yeah, but she likes galloping flat out too. So,
yeah, I do.
Really?
I kind of do.
Well, and I probably would like it better there. Like I was listening to the Mongolian stories from December the other day when I was driving, and I was thinking, you know, if I had a horse that I was reasonably sure wasn't going to spook its stuff, then I probably would enjoy galloping flat out. But Liberty, I think, gallop flat out. Liberty, fence post, woof, deer, woof. It's never a good thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I think.
Well, this way, you know, the only thing that's going to get in your way in Kenya is a lion or, you know, a giraffe or maybe an elephant. You know, the other reason you
it's
have to know
minor
how to,
problem.
Yeah, the other reason they require you to, you know, be able to gallop flat out is to get away from them. So when they chase you.
True.
That's true. All right, last one. And I got to tell you, I'm not going for either one of these, so I'd be out on both. I'd stay home. Mine with non-horsey, Havana, Cuba. I just have no desire to go to Cuba. I just don't. And I know one of our listeners just went, and she's probably listening to this right now. She just went to Cuba and seemed to have an amazing time, but it's just not on my list of places to see. Maybe yours is different. What's yours?
Mine is Mexico.
Oh, well, then we're both out.
Val de Bravo, Mexico. It says, the ride circles the beautiful lake at Val de Bravo, or Valle de Bravo. The route takes one high into the surrounding mountains through the magnificent forest of the Montezuma Pines, with spectacular views of the Azure Lake far below. Guests stay in a lovely villa with charming hosts. The horses intact compare well to the best European rides. I would actually not mind going to Cuba. I mean, I'm not like dying to go, but I find Cuba interesting. Ever since I saw Guys and Dolls, where they pretended to go to Cuba in the musical, I always thought, you know, it'd be kind of fun. You know, it's a beautiful moonlight and restaurants, and if you don't get in trouble, you know, while you're there and end up in jail. So.
Well, I'll tell you what, though. One of our next guests coming up, Jennifer is going to get him on the phone here. His name is Carlos, and he's at Wander Themes, and one of their options is a place I would like to go sometimes. That's Costa Rica. I think it just looks like they have the best zip lines there too, at the tops of the forests and things. And you know, everybody dreams about riding on the beach in Costa Rica. So, So we'll talk to him about that. I think he's going to have some better options than we came up with here. And we're going to do that in just a minute. But first, you have to talk about your product review and a new sponsor coming on board.
Yes, we have. NATRC is very happy to welcome Cuda Saddles. They're in Florida. I think they're in Ocala, aren't they?
I don't know.
Seems like, I don't know. I went there, and I'm just trying to remember which part of my Florida adventure that I was, but it seems like it was Ocala.
Huh.
But it's owned by Mauricio Villa. I probably just butchered his name. It's probably Villa. I don't speak Spanish. But they specialize in tack for Pasofinos, but they do all kinds of custom biothane tack and saddles. And he does custom saddles. My friend Teresa ordered a saddle for Cayenne, the horse that I was riding at her house. And it was awesome. It was super comfortable. And it's like, when I got in it for the first time, I thought, oh, this is kind of hard. It didn't have a ton of padding. She doesn't like a lot of padding, but the way that the twist was and the way it sat, it was so comfortable that you didn't, you know, once you nestled in, you didn't realize that it wasn't padded. You know, it was just so comfortable, but it just, everything was perfect about it. And it was balanced, and the stirrups are in the right place. And they have these really cool stirrups that I've talked about before that they're one piece, and they have a turner. They can make them in English and Western, where they have like the extra piece at the top that turns them. So they lay perpendicular to the saddle. So you don't have to turn your saddle, turn your stirrups. And they've been really excellent for Mike because he has neuropathy and wears leg braces. And when he was riding Western, it was really hard on his legs to try to turn the stirrups on his Western saddle. And so I got him these stirrups and put him on the saddle that I got him away from the Western saddle and put him in an endurance saddle. And they've been a lot more comfortable for him. And if he drops one, it's so much easier to pick up because he doesn't have to, you know, like stop and bend over and turn the stirrup. He can kind of just put his foot right back in. So, but we're looking forward to having Mauricio on the show here in the next month or two and talk about his store. I know that they travel to shows all over, not just Pasofino shows, but they're a really cool company, and we look forward to talking to them more in the future.
And they're out of Winter Garden, Florida, which is right outside of Orlando.
Winter Garden.
Yeah, it's right outside of Orlando.
Okay.
That's
where they're in Orlando then. I couldn't remember what part of our journey. I just remember I looked up where they were when we were driving and went, and I couldn't remember because I stayed the night in Ocala and we didn't get to see you guys. And I couldn't remember what part of the trip we
went. Yeah, it's right off the Florida Turnpike there. And we'll definitely, next time we head down, we'll have to stop at a store. I didn't even know it was there. So there we go. Terrific. Well, we're looking forward to having them on board. Your guest is ready.
Okay. Oh, Carlos,
no,
good
wait
morning.
A minute.
Nope.
Carlos, are you there?
Hey, how are you?
Good.
There we go. Yay. Well, say Carlos is the owner of Wander Themes, and he has been creating adventures all his life. A marketing communications team led by some of the world's top brands. Carlos has been globetrotting for over 20 years, living and working on 5 continents. Good morning, Carlos.
Good morning, Alice. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you here. So I see you speak
you.
English and Spanish, and it says you torture German. Does that mean you speak German or you sort of, you speak? That would be hard. German is so different.
The Germans. Yes, it is. Yes, it's once you. But it's like all languages, you know. Once you forget about the grammar and don't mind making mistakes, it's about the people, and people enjoy you. You know, trying your best. That's what I've found.
No, I think that's true. I speak pretty much no Spanish, but I understand a fair amount, you know, like, especially when we're talking about Mexican restaurants. Telemundo, I actually can watch Telemundo and pretty much figure out what's happening, but I never know what to say back.
Oh my goodness. That's okay. You can get by with practically anything.
So, out of curiosity, how long has Wander Themes been going? I know it's a relatively new company, isn't that correct?
That is correct. As an idea and me organizing these types of trips, we've been doing it for the last 2 or 3 years. Wander Themes as a company actually started last summer. And we've taken our first horse trips to Colombia since September and October. We're actually planning out to April right now with some exciting trips as well.
I was going to say, just tell us some of the different locations. You said Colombia. I know about Costa Rica, but tell us about some of like the variety of locations.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I've been a writer all my life. So one of the things, and I'm passionate about travel. So if you get to look at my website, you'll see that I have a very varied sort of assortment of different experiences. It's all about the experience, but horses are very much at the core because of my own interests. So I've got, right now I have 4 rides to Colombia. One in the plains, which is a cattle adventure, which is really cool. There's one that's a colonial town adventure that retraces the Spanish royal roads. There's another one that's basically a tour of haciendas. That's a 6-day tour of haciendas all the way to a colonial town. And obviously, for coffee lovers, there's a coffee tour that's starting up. I'm also introducing at the end of the month a trip in Mexico, following the silver route in Guanajuato, which is really, really exciting. So I'm excited about that. And we're looking at doing them in Costa Rica as well towards, just before the summer.
I picked up on the coffee trip.
Me too.
Do they use very fast horses because you're like high on coffee the whole time?
Actually, they have to be very mellow because everybody's so wired, I guess.
I was just like,
Yeah, it's interesting you ask that because those are probably the most mellow of the horses that I've had any experience with. They're very calm. They're Creole. They're used to carrying heavy loads up high mountains because it's a very mountainous region. So they're very sure-footed. They're a mixture of Spanish and Creole. So they're easy walkers and they're pretty good for all levels of experience. That's probably the easiest ride. It's also a great experience because you get to go through, sugarcane fields and forests and mountains and through the coffee fields and the farms and the villages.
Now, one of the things, too, that we've always run into when we talk about travel and when our listeners go out and travel, they're always concerned about the care of the horses. People do not want to go to a destination and find skinny, malnourished horses. So I assume that you make sure that that's not what they're going to end up with on their trips.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I partner with the 2 best horse operators in Colombia, and I'm partnering with the best horse operator in Mexico. Now they've been handling these trips for years for very demanding European companies. They've all been bred for the local conditions and to make it fun and interesting for the riders. But there's always a farrier on the trip. Horse care is first of all the first thing that's done in the morning is take care of the horses. The first thing that's done when the ride is over is take care of the horses. And I've been personal witness to all of that. There's a great feed. They're owned by the operators. So it's not like somebody's farm horse that they don't use. So they let you out. That's what you get mostly like in day trips when you go to these places or any place. These are actually horses that are bred for long distance trips. For example, we have a very demanding trip to the colonial royal roads, and they are a mix of Arabian and thoroughbred, large horses.
Nice.
Demanding, but extremely well taken care of.
So in our conversation behind the scenes, you've told me that on one of those Colombian trips, they ride Pasafinos, which is a growing passion of mine. That's the trip I want to take. Mm-hmm. So can you tell me about that trip?
Yes, absolutely. Actually, in 2 of them. On the Hacienda rides, we start off the trip with we go to a Colombian, it's like a tack shop, but it's actually like a leather goods workshop. And it's attached to a very prominent Pasofino breeding ranch. So we get to have a show with, you know, they have these what they call chalanes. The chalanes are the like the jockeys for the Pasofino horses, and we go through different Pasofino gates. We get to see one of the award-winning horses, and you also get the opportunity to ride them. We don't use them on long rides because they're not that efficient, but we do get that experience. That's actually one of the days on that trip, and we do the same thing on our coffee ride as well.
Oh, so I could have a coffee ride with Pasofinos. That sounds
yes.
awesome.
Do it before your coffee so that you don't get nervous.
Yeah, I was just thinking
they're wonderful horses.
I have horses.
You know that, Alice. And yes. For anybody in your audience who has not had the experience of riding a Pasofino, you know, really, really put that on your bucket list.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's just the way they just, it's, anyway, takes your breath away in a good way.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So,
yes.
And I heard you talking about Mexico. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Uh-huh.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say that there's actually an interesting demonstration that the Chalanes do, which is they serve a tinto, which is a very dark coffee in a small cup. It's a little larger than an espresso cup. And the Chalan holds it in one hand and sips on it while he's riding the Pasofino. And so while the horse is prancing, just to show how smooth the ride is, doesn't spill a drop of coffee. So that, yeah, it's kind of fun to watch.
Oh, yeah, I bet it would be. I have ridden a couple that are smooth enough to do that, but I think mm-hmm. I don't think I'm usually holding coffee.
No, it's probably alcohol is my guess. It's not coffee at all. That's...
It was probably water, actually, but yeah. You can just keep going and get your water out and drink it and get on the trail. Not have to bounce
out.
But you were talking about going to Mexico, and before you came on, Glenn and I were doing a list of places we would go visit, either on horseback or not on horseback, and we each had, it was a top five list, and we each had Mexico as part of our top five list, and we had kind of said, determined mm-hmm. that we weren't sure we really wanted to go to Mexico right now. So tell me why mm-hmm. I should go to Mexico and ride horses.
Well,
tell me why it's
you know,
safe
I,
and it's I, fun I, and it's beautiful I, and...
Yeah, it's an amazing place. As I told you, I lived there for 11 years. And the area, I mean, Mexico has had difficult times.
Yes.
There are areas like everywhere where it's, you know, more dangerous than others, to be honest. But you can't miss a lot of what Mexico has to offer. It's really wonderful. The area where we are is actually central. It's about 3 hours away from the capital. It's extremely safe. It's there's actually a town there called San Miguel de Allende that may be familiar to a lot of your listeners. Lots of Canadians, Americans, retirees, artists live there. So this trip I'm doing is actually from Guanajuato, which is the silver capital of Mexico. It was built on a hill made of silver, I mean, underneath. So there's tunnels underneath it, and the mines and all that stuff are underneath the town. And we go through the mountains and through the desert, and we stay at beautiful, you know, centuries-old haciendas on the way and boutique hotels. So it's all very,
oh, nice.
Very nice. Great food and very well taken care of. So it's extremely civilized, you know. We do have a very authentic experience there. You get to ride like the charros, which are these, you know, they're not really cowboys, but they're, you know, like riders and Mexican cattlemen that are very well decked out, beautiful horses, beautiful saddles. There's music as well. And as I said, you know, just the nature and the possibility to go. This route was actually the one they used to take the silver from the mines to Mexico City. And it was also the route where a lot of the towns where the independence started. So there's a lot of history, and our guides are very, you know, very versed in that. And they make the whole, you know, storytelling experience fun. So besides riding, you get to live out, you know, all these amazing places south of the border, you know, they are very wonderful.
Now, if which of these trips that you offer, whatever country, and by the way, I want to talk to you a little bit about one that might appeal to horse husbands too. Which trip is the most challenging, and you really should be a serious rider, and this will give serious riders a challenge. Which one would you recommend to them?
Well, it's actually one in Colombia called Oiba to Barichara. I called it from historical to famously romantic. It was the connection between Venezuela and Colombia during colonial times with some royal roads. So it was built by the Spaniards. The horses are demanding. They are these thoroughbred and Arabian mix, strong, great horses. And our leader there, Julio Pardo, is one of the top endurance riders in the country. So his daughter, who is 17, is actually a 3-time national champion. So they like their trails, you know, like exciting. You get these amazing views of canyons. You go through forests. And again, you see these paths that are hundreds of years old. You don't touch pavement once in this 6-day trip. And I've ridden it. There are 2 9-hour ride days, which I rode once 3 hours in the rain, which was very interesting. and the rest are, you know, 6 to 8-hour ride days. So, you know, it's for somebody who really likes to do it. The cool thing about it as well is that you get to stop, like, you know, little stores on the way and little country places. It's very beautiful. Very beautiful.
Now I'm looking at the one that might appeal to, and you can clarify this, it might appeal to the couples where, you know, maybe the husband's not such into riding. He'll go, but, you know, it's not his favorite thing to do. And that's the one that combines whitewater rafting at the Antonio National Park. Tell us about that.
Oh, okay. So, this is in Costa Rica. We're still developing that one.
Okay.
But that is a portion. It does have a portion that is whitewater rafting in Manuel Antonio National Park. It's a beautiful place. It's close to the beach, but the amazing part of it are the rivers. So we stay in river lodges along the way. And I mean, you make a very good point, because this is something that families and, you know, husbands, if they're not that into riding, can drive through the route and meet the riders, you know, with a drink in their hand.
Oh, really?
At the end of the day, next to the river, and you can go rafting and walking through the forest and looking at the wildlife and all of that. One of the things I wanted to point out in all of my trips is you can actually do that in all of them. We have an accompanying vehicle that's no further than 15 minutes away from the team, even though it doesn't look like, because you feel like you're way out in the wild, and goes through some amazing routes as well. So we've designed it that way so that it's enjoyable, and that the destinations are also interesting for non-riders and, you know, couples and that kind of thing.
Cool. Well, that's good to know. And that is the case a lot of times, isn't it? I mean, you know, one rides, one doesn't. That's the way it is with 90% of our audience. So,
Yes. Yeah. And sometimes they ride, or, you know, they can, you know, a 9-hour ride is very demanding, and, you know, somebody may justifiably just get tired after 4 hours or 3 hours or whatever. So we have the opportunity to, you know, take them on something else and still enjoy it and still be able to talk about the region and area and share with the team. There are stops in our planes trip where we all get together at lunchtime, and the lunchtime is next to a waterfall, and the table is decked out, you know, the tablecloth is actually plantain leaves, and we have, you know, the food cooked on site, really nice, with the local chef. Have a beer or two, and the riders continue on their ride, and, you know, the other person can, you know, continue in the car.
Okay. I'm in. We don't have to do the dishes, Glenn.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, and I was thinking, you know, that
as far as either riding or non-riding vacations, that Glenn is not a camper. This is a running theme that I'm always coming up with cool places we could go ride, but they all require camping. And so I wondered, you know, what the best trips were for people who like who ride but don't camp or don't ride, or people who want the full out, you know, out in the wilderness experience and don't mind camping. I mean, which, like, you know, are there both types of trips?
There's a little of both. We don't camp, we do have, most of our trips are staying in local haciendas, which are very large ranch houses. And, you know, they are rustic and old, but very comfortable and elegant, you know, with a lot of charm to it. In our plains trip, for example, we do have a night where we sleep in hammocks. In the locals, they call it a chinchorro. It's a house that's just the roof. There's no wall, so you get the, you know, the wind and everything, and you sleep there. So you have to learn how to sleep in a hammock. For those who haven't done it,
that'd be awesome.
It's a technique in itself. Yeah, but we try to make it so that, you know, it's exciting and challenging during the day on the horse, but you also get the opportunity to relax and unwind and, you know, have a wine and a really nice meal, maybe a local show or something like that. So you get the full cultural experience as well, and it feels like a vacation.
If I'm riding for 9 hours, you can just take me to the hospital and I'll sleep there every night. Hook up the IV and I'll be good. That's what I was thinking. You know, one of the things I would love to see more of, I'm just throwing this out there into the world and hopefully somebody like you catches it. There are a couple, not many, in the world. I'm a carriage driver, and in Bolivia, there is a great carriage company that will take you around through the Alps and all that stuff. And it's so popular. He sells out every year. I would love to see more carriage riding, riding or driving vacations. Is that something you've ever considered?
You know what? That's an excellent idea. I hadn't thought of it, but I have done it. And now that you mentioned it, I'm going to look into it and see what I can design. Thank you.
Yeah, because they have some
great price on my first trip.
Thank you. The Spanish have some beautiful carriages, and they have a culture that was based on carriage driving. You know, it was really based on that. So I imagine you could put some end-to-end trips together that would be really cool. And then if you have the non-drivers who you just want to sit in the carriage, they have a way to go, you know? You know,
that would be the carriage driving wife. Right.
Exactly. Or just people who, you know, I think what happens with the drives like they have over in Europe is you get the carriage drivers, but you also get people who just want to see the scenery and, you know, don't want to have to ride, and you pick up that crowd as well. Just a thought. I thought I'd throw it out there.
Great. No, it's a great idea. I have taken note of that.
Okay, good. Good. Let me know. All right. Let me know when that happens.
I will. You'll be the first one to know, Glenn.
Okay, good. And we'll have to let you go on this question. How about paying for it? How does that work as far as what people have to pay and how all that works?
Oh, okay. So our trips are end to end. So the only thing we don't cover in our price are the tickets to the destination and the tickets out, airline, but everything else is paid for. I mean, you take some cash maybe for tips, or if you want to buy something, you know, handicrafts on the way or whatever, but it's all included: horses, lodging, and food and everything.
Alcohol included?
Yes, we don't overdo it. You know, we do cover.
I know. I'm teasing. I'm just joking. Then,
Alice is going to have her flask. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Don't let her kid you.
But we do make it nice. We also cater to vegetarians.
Yeah. Do we start with a full flask every morning? That's the question. That's what we're getting at. Just asking.
Of coffee.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. That's what I meant.
That's right. That's,
Where can people find it?
Yeah. You can go online. My site is pretty easy to find. It's Wander Themes with an A, you know, like wandering and themes. Wanderthemes.com. and you'll see all of the experiences as well. I'm on Facebook, of course, as well as Wander Themes Travel Experiences. And I do, we do set up, you know, the pictures of our trips as well on Instagram, on Wander Themes Travel. So our friends can get there. I've also got a 1-888 number. It's 464-2797. And you can get me there. Yeah, I really look forward to hearing from your audience and seeing what they think.
All right, very good.
And Carlos is really easy to get a hold of. You call him, he answers, or if he doesn't answer, he calls you right back. And he's awesome to chat with. He doesn't live very far from me, and we're going to get together and ride soon. So
absolutely. Yeah, I'm in Austin. I'm in Austin, Texas. So, you know, a shout out to all fellow Texans out there.
Well, it sounds terrific, and we hope that some of our listeners get to head south and on some amazing vacations, and some of the more adventurous listeners, the eventers, can head off on the 9-hour-a-day one.
Absolutely, and I look forward to speaking to anybody to any of your listeners, and happy to custom design any trips they want to do as well. One more thing, I did tell Alice that there is minimum of a 300 discount on the web price for the NATRC members.
Oh, wow.
And your listeners in general who want to call me, let me know that you are NATRC members, and we'll definitely knock that off at between $300 and $400 per trip. So, you know, look forward to hearing from you.
Well, that's worth it. Very good. Well, thanks a lot. It's been fun. Mm-hmm. Take care.
Thank you very much. Yeah, right. It was great. Yeah, talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Are you ready to go? By the way, I wanted to clarify. Jennifer corrected me. I said it wrong. I said Bulgaria. I said Bolivia, and I actually meant Bulgaria. No, wait a minute. It is Bavaria. Sorry, too many B's. It's coaching in Bavaria is what I was talking about, which is in the Alps. Yes. Too many bees. Yeah, he had me thinking about...
We'll get the right country. Yeah. Just give us enough time.
Just too many bees.
You know, one of those countries in Europe over there somewhere.
Yes. And it's on my bucket list, actually, is to go coaching in Bavaria. So that would be cool sometime in the Alps. I just think that'd be fun. Yeah. Well, this sounds cool. It sounds like he's got trips that are a little different and, you know, made for everybody. And I really wanted to ask him the horse question, because that is the thing that a lot of horse lovers are hesitant to go riding in foreign countries when they don't know if they're going to end up with skinny horses that they, you know, it's just going to bother them the whole time. So I'm glad.
Or if they, how fast they're going to have to go to keep up. Like my friend Bambi that was on a couple months ago, you know, she went to India and rode and they galloped all day long.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people would probably prefer the coffee trip.
Exactly.
Solo and quiet.
Exactly. Well, very good. Well, now that you have talked all about Pasofino's, I had to dig out Marianne Kennedy's Pasofino song, which, by the way, is going to stick in everybody's head the entire day, and they're all going to hate me for it about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So, you did it. It's all your fault. It's all your fault. Blame Alice. You can send her an email at alicesshedoesn'tcare.com.
Send a complaint to Jennifer@horseradionetwork.com.
That's right. Complain to Jennifer. We'll be back. We have more guests to come. We're going to learn all about GPSs, how to use them, and what are the best ones out there for trail riding.
Still remember the first time I saw one. Mane and tail flowing, he moved like the wind. Smooth as a mesa across the horizon. I had to have one, I wanted to ride Pasofino. Power the brio, paka 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 paka. Nothing can carry me quite like you do, paka 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 paka. Fino and quarto, Largo, Paso Fino. There is a rhythm no man ever taught them, and the stallions, it runs in their blood. I sit in the saddle and hold the machete. I feel the fire and I have to ride Paso Fino.
That's Marianne Kennedy with Paso Fino. You can find all of her music at MariannKennedy.com. Had you heard that one before?
I think I'd heard part of it, yeah, because I remembered the paka paka part.
Paka, yeah, that's the part that's going to stick in your head about 2 in the morning tonight.
<It's> like... I don't know. For whatever reason, I keep singing Eagle songs in my head that they've been stuck in my brain since, like, the Kennedy Center Awards, you know, because they have that tribute to the Eagles. And it's like I find myself walking around going, you know, singing the one that you love. And I'm like, where is that coming from?
Well, you know, Eagle songs were, I think they were intentionally psychologically made that way. They were made so that they would stick in your head. I think they did studies, and that's what happens with Eagle songs. Because it seems to happen with all of them, too. Yeah. Yeah, no question about
it. Yeah, and I don't just, it's like I have a whole soundtrack in my brain, and they're all Eagles. And I'm like, where is this coming from?
Have you ever been to an Eagles concert?
No, I never have. I like them, though. I like them a lot.
Yeah, I was at one, I mean, years ago. I was at an Eagles concert years ago. And that is true. It happened for the next week. That's all that's in your head is Eagles songs. So I get it.
Yep.
Well, your next guest is ready. By the way, you are listening to the NATRC show with Alice. We're here the third Thursday of every month. And real quick, before we get to our guest, just explain how people, if they want to become a free member for their first membership, if they're first-time members, how do they do that?
They go to our website at natrc.org and just scroll down, and there's a place for signing up to be a member. Or they can call the number that's listed on the website and talk to our executive administrator, Sarah Rennie, and she can help them with that.
Very good. All right. Let's go to our next guest.
Very easy. Click, click. You're done. So, good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Alice. Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, I'm so happy. I know we're getting you up kind of early for a...
No, it's Colorado.
Well, I don't know.
No,
it's not that bad, I guess.
Okay. Yeah, well, it's 8 o'clock.
Whenever I talk to people in California, they always are like, yeah, you got to have me on at 10 o'clock Eastern time because it's too early otherwise. So, but you guys are in between, so that's not so bad.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, I wanted to introduce you. You're a rider from our region for 3, which is in Colorado. What part of Colorado are you in?
I'm a little south of Denver.
But do you guys have snow right now, or is it?
Yeah, we had a few inches the other day. It's when you probably saw the news in Colorado about 5.5 feet of snow in Crested Butte. That's not us. We're okay. Out on the Front Range on the plains, and we've just had a few inches in the last few days. It's not nearly as nasty out here as you may have heard. It's actually pretty
pleasant. Well, it seems like every time Denver gets snow, it's kind of like Texas. It snows, but you guys get heaps of it, but then it melts 2 or 3 days later.
Yes, that's the beauty of Colorado. It's sunny and sunny, beautiful, and 55 today, and a few days ago it was snowing and 20. So we have beautiful weather here.
You were using your GPS to find your way to the barn in a blizzard.
Just about sometimes. Our barn's not anywhere near the house, so it's in a blizzard. You have to pay attention. Sometimes have to pay attention.
So, which brings us to the purpose of our visit today. You are kind of considered the GPS guru for NATRC. At least I know as far as Region 3 goes, everybody comes to Bill to talk about how to use their GPS more efficiently. And I know I have a GPS, I have a Garmin, and I use it for giving me my speed that I'm going, or my average speed, or how far I've gone, or how long I've been riding. But I would like to know how to use the mapping features a little more efficiently. So I know that upload the map, put them on devices and stuff. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's all the handheld GPSs, all the handheld mapping GPSs out there, whether it's a Garmin or I can never pronounce the name correctly, DeLorme, they all allow people to drop what I call breadcrumbs. Basically, they kind of keep track of where you've been. And before I go, whenever I go to a new ride or if I'm putting on my own ride, I'll take a couple GPSs out and I'll record the trail I've been on. You can then take that data and go back to your computer, download it, and kind of get rid of wrong turns and various other things, and you can make GPS tracks that you can share with other people. That's really nice for making nice maps, because when I put on a ride or when I help other people with rides, we'll use the GPS tracks to actually make the map. So they're accurate, which is really nice. I get good distance measurement, so it's hard to have mystery miles show up on the trail. And then when people show up at a ride, I can give them the GPS track, and they can take that track out on the trail, and they always know where they are, and they know where the trail is. So it makes it much harder to get lost. People really enjoy not getting lost out on the trail, particularly when you're at a timed event and you have to be somewhere at some point in time.
Right. Having gotten lost in Colorado, I 100% understand that. So, but how does the GPS tell you? And if you're going down the trail, you're not looking at your map. How does the GPS tell you that you're on trail or off trail?
It can. It's but that's not how it normally works. It's with the GPS, with the mapping GPS, it's like your smartphone, and you can actually use your smartphone for this. They're becoming a lot more common, a lot better. They're not real durable, and the battery life isn't very good, but they have great maps. Basically, with a GPS track, you're basically putting a line on the map, and when you have your GPS in your hand, it's you can look down at it, and you can say, where am I on the map? And where is the trail on the map? If you're out in the mountains and you're looking at your entire trail, which is 20 miles long, you're just going to be a little dot somewhere on this line. But what you do is you can zoom way in on these maps. GPSs have an accuracy of about 10 feet. And so if you zoom way in on the map and basically your screen has a width of, say, 200 feet, you can see if you're to the right of the trail or to the left of the trail, or if you just missed a turn 50 feet behind you, or if there is a turn coming up 100 feet ahead of you. And it's, we had one trail in Colorado. People, it's the first time I managed this ride. I had done the trail once. There were lots of social trails. Somebody had pulled down 3 miles of ribbon for us. So I had no idea. It's, nobody had any idea where to go. But just looking down at my GPS, I could walk the trail, which I'd only done once before, putting ribbons back up. It's just kind of follow the line. And it's really, that's really easy once you get used to it. The nice thing about it is if you're...
Did we lose Alice?
Go ahead.
Nope, I'm back.
Okay. Thought we, back. We lost her there for a minute.
Yeah. Go ahead. I was going to say, so if you have the line of the map and you're looking at it, I mean, like if you don't have any ribbons, but you have your map, you can keep an eye on your line and keep going or tell if you've missed a turn or whatever, even if there's no ribbons or any other physical map.
Yes, yes. It's real easy. It's something you have to get used to, but basically as you walk down the trail, the map moves under you on the GPS and the line just kind of moves with you. And you literally, you can see if you're 5, 10 feet to the right of the trail, 5 feet, 10 feet to the left of the trail. It doesn't tell you which way you have to go down the trail. We kind of assume that you know which direction you're going, but, you can literally, it's usually if you're that close, you can see where the trail is. I put a ride on in January where they actually let us go wherever we want, and about half the trail is off or on cow paths at best. And it's, people found it very interesting and very challenging because we were taking people through scrub oak, and it's, and the only way through was to follow this very narrow path. If you weren't on path, you weren't going to get through. Everybody got through, and you just follow the path along. We have enough riders out here that not everybody has to. People will kind of glom on to someone who does have one, and it's very nice. You say, am I on trail? Are we going the right direction? And people can look down at their GPS and say yes or no. It works very nicely.
Now, Bill, let's get practical here. If somebody's going to, you know, is trail riding and they decide they finally want to get a GPS, not even competing, but, you know, even trail riding, what do they do? Which one should they get? Do you have a recommended one? And what would the price range be?
There are a few things. There are a couple ways to look at this. Right now, the people's smartphones are becoming very good, and there's some really good software out there that you can get. I use a package by Trimble. It works on both Android phones and on iPhones. Before you go out, you can pre-download very good satellite imagery or download very good topographic maps. So when you get off the grid, when you're out of cell service, you still have the maps there. What I don't like about cell phones is that they're not very durable. If you drop one, they break.
And the battery life.
It's hard to pull. Yeah. Battery life is really bad, and particularly when you're out on the trail and there is no cell service, the phones go into a search mode, and they can eat through a battery very quickly. Out here, we have some people who will put them in airplane mode, and that really will help with the battery life. You won't get any calls, but your battery life is much better. Personally, I like carrying a handheld dedicated GPS. They're a lot more durable. Battery life, I can be with a couple AA batteries. They're good for 3 or 4 weekends of riding. I'm out riding for 6 or 8 hours at a time. So the battery life is very good. They're a little more expensive. I personally use a Garmin eTrex 20. You can get it on Amazon for about $150. The prices can start to add up. If you start to add like a topographic mapping package, which I recommend, that can add another $100, and they're good for like a 5-state region. You need to get the more detailed maps, that are based on kind of USGS 1 to 24,000 scale maps that you might hike with. If you get the bigger ones, that have the entire U.S. is the coverage. They don't have enough detail. But if I've been out in Arizona and we have these topographic maps, you can say, oh, this is that draw going down this canyon. This is that creek. There's your additional data.
Are you saying that you buy the maps and then load them?
Yeah, they come on a little micro SD chip that you put in the back of the in the back of the GPS. I've personally made my own. I started this like 10 years ago, and there are no good maps on the market. And Florida and Utah and Arizona, New Mexico, Utah, and Colorado. I've made made my own maps, which I'll give to riders. And I just charge them like $2 or $3 for the SD card if I even bother to do that. But they'll have roads on it and the topographic data and streams and creeks. You need to have some additional data on it, otherwise you have a blank screen staring at you. It may be plenty, but it's nice to have a little bit more information. There are other brands out there, but for our region, I pretty much tell people to get the Garmins. One is what I use. I know they work. They're durable. You can spend as little as $150 for the basic ones. Some of the people carry much fancier ones that you can put satellite imagery on, and you can go up to $600 pretty quickly. I don't ever recommend that. Some people like them, but they're kind of overkill.
I was looking on Amazon while you were talking at the handheld GPSs. There are 900 handheld GPS options. I was like, oh my God, that's a lot of... Jeez.
I would recommend if you do a search on Amazon is to search on Garmin and E-T-Rex, E-T-R-E-X.
Yep.
And that'll give you a few options. And you want the 20 or the 30. The 30 is really nice if you're seriously into competition and you want a heart rate monitor for your horse. I can't think of who sells it, but you can get a heart rate monitor, so for the heart rate monitor route, you need to have the Garmin GPS. You need to get a Garmin heart rate monitor. And then you need to get it this additional package, which is another $70 or so, which attaches it to your horse. And then you can go down. That's it. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. They're one of our sponsors.
And so, yeah. So if you're an open rider and you're trying to watch how your horse is doing as you go down the trail and see how hard you can push him or if you're over pushing him, it's really nice. What I also like about the handheld GPSs over a cell phone is I have my GPS clipped onto my horse. I use a carabiner, a lanyard. I always use two points to tie it down because they bounce around a lot and you don't want it falling off on the trail when something breaks. I've had that happen. You don't want to leave $150 out on the trail. But when you're cantering down the trail or moving down the trail quickly, you can kind of look down and it's all have time, distance, and mileage displayed on my GPS. 95% of the time you can just look down and see how you're doing, seeing if you're on time and on distance. I prefer that to having to pull a cell phone out of my pocket and trying to ride quickly and not drop my phone as I'm riding down the trail.
That makes sense. A question I have about, like you said, that you want some more information on the map besides just the line. I know last week I was riding a trail that was marked, and I actually have a paper map, but I'm trying to make a fresh track because the map I have is a hand-drawn map. And I was putting waypoints in as I stopped so that when I got home and I downloaded it, I could compare it to the hand-drawn map and see where different things were. Well, when I uploaded my map to Garmin, it was just a blank map. My waypoints didn't show up on the thing I was looking at. And I'm sure I did something wrong. I'm sure that it was fine, but I didn't know how to find my waypoints again.
There are a couple things here. When I tell people to, when they GPSs, you have to be careful with GPSs because they they can do weird things out on the trail. As you say, you can think you've marked data and it may not be there. I've had GPSs where they're, and when you're out on the trail, they appear to be mapping a very accurate trail, but they actually think they're a mile or two away from where they actually are. Particularly some of the older models, they sometimes get confused. Assuming everything is working, when you get back to your home and you download the data, I would just make sure that you're correctly centered on the trail, and the track should be there. The waypoint should be there. I would have to look at your file to see what that individual file, what that actually went wrong. It's marking waypoints is very good. And even if waypoints fail, sometimes what I've done is usually when you stop, your horse tends to walk around in a little circle and do various other things. And if you kind of, I think I've lost you.
We're still here. We're listening.
Oh, okay. I'm hearing a beep in the background. So if you've lost the waypoint, sometimes what you can do is you can zoom in on the trail and you'll actually see the little circle on your GPS tracks. And so you can often go back and say, oh, I recognize this bend. I know where it is on the map. And then you can mark that as your waypoint. Mark your waypoint in your mapping software. I've kind of gotten to the point where when I'm out in the trail, I usually don't bother to mark waypoints. It's sometimes I will, sometimes I won't. But usually you ride around in a little circle and when you get back home, you'll see a little jinx in the trail and you can say that's where that point was. A waypoint's definitely better, because it's right as opposed to having to guess. But, if you forget to mark a waypoint, it's not the end of the world and you go back to your track data and find it.
There was an endurance ride down this place, and so the ribbons are up, but we couldn't find the points on the hand-drawn map. Like, there's a huge stock tank, but it wasn't on the map. Okay. I'm like, where are we?
Right. Right. And what I will also do, if I go out when I'm setting up a map, or particularly when I'm doing it for somebody else, they'll say that there's a stock tank out there somewhere. And you don't know exactly where it is go on Google Maps and turn on the satellite imagery and you can look for it. And you can see a stock tank that's 6 feet in diameter no satellite imagery anymore will show up very nicely. It's right here.
It showed up on the map when I downloaded it. So I saw the waypoint for it.
Well, let's wrap this with one of the things I wanted to mention too is that almost every one of these GPSs has somebody that has done a YouTube video on how to use it. So definitely don't forget YouTube when you get your new GPS, because there are a million videos on waypoints and how to use it and all of that. I agree with you about having a separate one. One, your battery life is a big one. And also, you know, being connected all the time. And you tend to want to use your phone for taking pictures or videos or whatever. And it's free to do that, too. So that's the other good advantage to having a separate one.
Yes, absolutely.
Very good. Well, Bill, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for being on.
All right. Take care, Bill. Well, there you go. There's everything you needed to know about a GPS and were afraid to ask. Which one do you use? Do you use your phone or do you use a separate one?
No, I have a Garmin. I was trying to look and see which one I have because, of course, now I can't remember. But it was after the lady from Distance Depot was on last year. I bought the one she told me to buy.
I was looking at the one he recommended, which is the Garmin eTrex 30X, and it's $185 on Amazon right now. But the one nice thing I like about these Garmin eTrex ones is they really look heavy duty and durable. It has the rubber coating, and if you drop this and it bounces off a rock, it's probably going to make it.
Sometimes I have a friend who has a Garmin eTrex, and we've had trouble figuring out all the time how to make it run. But she's pretty sure that it's her own lack of technological savvy versus, you know, I don't know. I just know that on one ride we were on, we don't know what was happening. We couldn't make it start.
Well, you know,
show her where she was and how fast she was going, but
I know horse people and horse women are not exempt from this. They're not good at reading directions either. This is probably one thing you want to read the directions on, just saying, or watch the video.
It is. I had an early Garmin eTrex. Like, my very first GPS back in 2004 was an eTrex because they were very affordable. And I admit that it was one of those things. It's like I couldn't figure it out without the directions. And I finally read the directions, but then I wouldn't use it, and then I'd have to go back and read the directions.
Mm-hmm. That is one problem with things like this. I like that the maps actually come in SD cards, because if you've ever tried to download maps from the internet, I don't care how good a connection you have, it takes like a freaking week. So it takes a long time, and that's why I'm sure they do the SD cards, because it's just so much easier. Plus, they can put more on them. It's more detailed.
I don't have that with mine.
Yeah, you can pop them in and out then as you go to different places. You don't have to buy them, obviously. But if you're doing serious trail riding and you're going to places, this is a minor expense compared to what you're paying for fuel. So,
absolutely.
So it's just a minor expense. And getting lost in some of the mountains if you're doing serious trail riding is not fun. So this is probably a better option. Well, good. I'm glad you had them on. I didn't know a lot of that stuff.
Okay, one of my favorite options on a map is the navigate to home option.
Yeah, there you go.
Make sure you mark home before you leave.
You have to mark it before you leave, though. That's right.
That's right.
All right, very good. Well, Alice, thanks a bunch. Where can people find more information again about the NATRC?
They can find it at natrc.org, and there's information about the free membership, and the ride calendar is there. You know, in February, still not a lot of rides, but beginning of March, everybody hits it hard.
You can also send your entries in for this week's Really Bad Ads. Matter of fact, it'll be the last Really Bad Ads of the month as we're traveling next Friday. So get your ads into Jennifer@horseradionetwork.com. Just look at Craig's list in the farm and section where you find all the horses for sale. And if you find a really bad ad, send it to Jennifer and it might get read on the air. We have a little bit of fun with that every Friday, and we give away terrific prizes as well. So if you want to enter, again, it's Jennifer@horseradionetwork.com. And as we say every day, if you have a complaint about anything, doesn't even have to be horses of the Horse Radio Network, send them to Jennifer@horseradionetwork.com. She is the official complaint department for the world. And she loves it so much, too, Alice. She really does. It's her favorite thing. All right. I did want to also remind everybody that you can get our app. It's the easiest way to listen to all of our shows. We have 12 now, and you can find it at the on iOS or Android in the App Store. Just search for Horse Radio Network. The two brand new shows are on there, the Plaidcast and also the 2018 WEG show for the World Equestrian Games, are both on the app, both Android and iOS. So you can listen to the new shows there as well. Alice, you can find all of Alice's past episodes if you want to. You know, most of what we talk about on this episode every month is not timely, so you could listen to it anytime and it would be relevant. And she is on the third Thursday of every month. Just search for NATRC at horseradionetwork.com and it'll bring up all the past episodes. Thanks, Alice.
Thanks, Glenn. Thanks, Jen. Have a great day.
All right. We'll see you.